Welcome to This Is Money podcast, sponsored by Charles Stanley Direct. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and Simon Lambert today is Lee Boyce. And coming up, what on earth is revenge saving? And why are more of us doing it? We'll look at the latest social media money trend. But hang on, actually, we're meant to forget about revenge saving and use a mind trick saving method instead to build a healthy pot of cash. All will become clear, I hope. Meanwhile, we look at the little-known government savings account that has seen £220 million paid out in bonus payments. Could you benefit from opening one? And a current account with a 6% savings rate, but it'll set you back a whopping £17 a month. Is it worth it? Also today, HMRC can now take money directly from your bank account or ISA if you haven't paid your taxes. Can't see any problems there. Nationwide offers a bumper cash bonus for current account switchers. And why won't I get my state pension on my 66th birthday? Pension's agony uncle Steve Webb answers your questions. Don't forget to stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, a message from our sponsors. You've probably heard Lisa Kaplan from Charles Stanley Direct on this podcast sharing her brilliant financial tips. Well, now it's your turn. With Charles Stanley Direct's financial coaching service, you can speak to Lisa or one of her expert team one-to-one about your own money questions. No jargon, no pressure, just clear, practical guidance. And the best bit, you can start with a free 15-minute call. Just head to charles-stanley.co.uk/financial-coaching. Go on, why not get answers from the experts you already trust? Remember, investment involves risk. Now back to today's episode. So there's a new money trend on social media, a savings method that is gaining popularity as a way to budget and take control of your finances. But, and the clue is in the title, revenge spending goes a step further than just carefully tracking your money moves. So Lee, what is this all about? Revenge? Who are we taking revenge on, Lee, by saving? What is it? Why is it called that?
It sounds a bit like, when I first saw this, I felt like it was a bit Kill Bill. And it feels like it's like someone that's going around sort of like revenge saving. It passes the test of what is that? Which is why we wrote a story on it. So it is a social media phenomenon. It started in China. It went over to sort of the US, and now it's kind of reared its head in the UK. And a lot of kind of forums like Reddit and places like that, where people like to swap tips. You know, the community led kind of boards type thing. Now, I still don't fully know why it's called revenge saving, but there is a bit of a method behind the madness. Because if we go back to the pandemic, do you remember when people were building up lockdown savings pots because you weren't able to go out, spend money, you might have saved money on your commute, all of those kind of things. But the people were building up quite a healthy pot of cash. It created quite a big savings habit for a lot of people. When the lockdowns ended, lots of people rushed to the shops and out and about to do things, to spend the cash they saved. And the phenomenon was called revenge spending. So that's where this is where the roots have come in from this. Like, revenge saving is the kind of opposite of that. It's
right.
Actually, you can go and do all these things now. You can go to the shops, you know, buy impulse purchases and all of those kind of things. But you don't, because you're not spending it, you're saving it. So it's like extreme savings, essentially. So it's like going through challenges like the no buy challenge. So the no buy challenge is when you don't go to the supermarket for a month and you just use absolutely everything you've got in the cupboards, for example. You don't spend any of your money.
Which is a good idea anyway, isn't it?
Good idea, and it can help you just get that little pot of cash. Get you started into the savings habit. And then you can go into more kind of like granular things, like, you know, the 1p challenge, for example. You save a penny on day one and a penny every day, and then at the end of the year you end up with £667.95, very precisely. People do quite like doing these kind of things, because revenge saving to me is like, you think, oh, it's just another buzz term, like, what on earth is it all about? But anything that encourages people to save, and if it takes getting into that kind of group mindset where you're sharing money tips potentially with other people in forums and things, and you're geeing each other up to save more money, I think is a good thing, because it can be hard to get started. We're kind of in a period of high inflation again. You know, it's back up to 3.8%. You can still beat inflation with the very best savings accounts. But I would argue that this prevents anything will be probably people that are starting out on the savings journey and not really thinking too much about beating inflation. It's more about getting in the habit. It's more about getting that pot built up. And I think that's where this revenge saving kind of idea comes from.
I know, Lee, you said that this is, you know, some people could argue this is just another little gimmicky thing. It is. You know, it is really. I mean, revenge saving, it's just basically, so I would call it social saving. Why not? But I agree with you. And certainly if it's people saving for the first time. But actually, I think this benefits people who have actually probably got into kind of a rut with their finances. You know, there's a lot of talk about budget speculation, you know, cost of living, all these sorts of things coming down the line. The economy is a bit of a mess at the moment, both here and abroad. And I think people are just wanting to take a little bit of control back. It doesn't have to be a first time. I think a lot of people, don't they, just get into this habit. And sometimes some of these challenges, a friend of mine who did a no-spend January, which is actually not a bad time to do it, a no spend month, because well, no one wants to go out in January. Unfortunately, it's my birthday. Yeah,
and you probably put a stone on over December anyway. So it's
but it's anything. It's like a kickstart to hopefully a better relationship with money. And sometimes just having that kind of shock therapy of a couple of, you know, savings challenges is actually a really good thing. And we know that when you have accountability, when you have for anything, whether that's losing weight, this can be a good thing. However, Lee, I have to say, on your website, beyond this article explaining what revenge saving is, and perhaps we should all just go jump on TikTok and have a wee look too, but your savings reporter, Helen Curran, actually tells us to forget about revenge saving. So now we know what it is. We've now got to forget about it, because apparently we're to use a mind trick saving method to build a healthy pot of cash instead. Lee, what's this about?
Okay, I'm going to explain from top to bottom here, right? So we got the request at the start of the week to write something about revenge saving because it was kind of getting so much traction on social media. So we wanted to do a story just explaining kind of what it is. I sat down with Helen. You know, I used to be a savings reporter back in the day. It still has a place in my heart. I still care deeply about the saving, the world of saving and banking. I just can't help it. I can't help myself, Georgie. So I sat down and I said, I think what a lot of this boils down to is, again, thinking about people that don't save money or have done in the past but haven't for a while. I kind of was like, how about if we did a piece that's sort of explaining the kind of traps that people get into, the kind of things that people say, I don't save because of this. Now, of course, the number one thing I would argue is feeling that you don't have enough money at the end of the week, at the end of the month, to put it away. But you know, even if you put away £5 a week, £10 a week, it does snowball. So, that, you know, for example, if you put £10 a week, of course, you're going to have 520 quid at the end of the year. It becomes a bit of addictive. Then that £520, you might be able to do the same thing again for another year, or you might be able to just ramp it up to £15. And then you're seeing that all of a sudden it's ticking over into four figures. And then I think trying to get into that, I don't have enough money to save, even if it's just a couple of quid, even if it's the roundup features or some of the banks have now where it just goes into a little savings pot. It's a good habit to get into. And I just think a lot of people go, I haven't got enough money to save. I think the next thing that a lot of people will say, so this is Helen and I, we were just sitting down of what people, I think the mindset, which is where this kind of like mind trick method, we were just trying to call it something a bit catchy, right? Is interest, it's just thinking, well, savings rates aren't worth it. I've had this conversation so many times over the years with friends. Savings rates are just rubbish. They're not worth it. And listen, I get it. You know, you might be an investor instead. I always think it's good to do both, to be an investor and a saver, you know, just because of the long-term effects of investing typically beats saving over the long term. And especially in times of inflation and currently where inflation sat. But rates were actually pretty good and peaked in October 2023. You could get easy access for 5.2%. They've dipped away since, and you're talking more like 4.3% on easy access. But it doesn't matter. I would just ignore interest. I wouldn't even really think about it if you're starting from the beginning. Because, of course, if you are sticking away £10 a week in this example, over the course of the year, the amount of interest that you're going to earn is going to be minuscule. It's not worth thinking about. So just get that out of your mind. And then it's like visualizing the snowball of that pot of cash, right? So if you think about your pot of cash at the top of a mountain, it's just a tiny little pea. But as you roll it down the hill, the snowball gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And visualizing it like that, I think, can help make you go, okay, I am starting at £10 a week. And then when you do get over to a year, and you're at that kind of more, and it snowballed, and then you're getting more money in there, then interest does start to kind of have an effect. I think is a good way to think about it. And as I alluded to earlier, I think just automating it is a good idea. So just setting up a direct debit. We were having this conversation in the office the other day. Simon was explaining how he's got a savings account that he's kind of locked himself out of almost on purpose. Rachel was saying that basically she's got an ISA at a bank, but she's got no online access to it on purpose. And she just goes into the branch once a year to make sure that the rate's doing all right, and just doesn't touch it. And it is that kind of mentality sometimes, because if it is an easy reach, you might be tempted to tap into it. But I think any way that you can get into the habit, or you can try and convince someone to get into the habit of saving, is a good thing. But it is just getting yourself out of the mindset of thinking, I don't have enough money to save, the interest rates aren't worth it. And just getting on with it, automate it.
I couldn't agree with you more, Lee. Whenever I talk about savings and how I first sort of started, and this goes back because I'm talking about, do you remember, like, coins and the paper stuff that you hold? Well, it was a lot easier back in those days. And so I felt I had no money, and I really didn't. I wasn't paid very much at all. But every time I got some loose change, and I know you can get apps for this nowadays, I would stick it in one of those ceramic pots. Again, it's that thing you can't get access to unless you smash the pot. I accidentally dropped it in the end. But when I accidentally dropped it, there was about 350 quid in there. And I thought, well, that was easy. And it's just that confidence, that belief that actually, and whether that's physical or mental, it's the same thing. It's about trying to make something very frictionless, make it very easy to do, make it feel like you're not taking away from the quality of your life, otherwise you are not going to sustain it, and then keeping it somewhere where you're going to have to do some sort of action to get it out.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, and I think that's what kind of Simon and Rachel, that was the equivalent of the piggy bank that you had to smash. Actually, Georgie, from the desk I'm sitting at right now, I can see the piggy bank that you bought my firstborn, which is still getting money dropped into it now, and you've made me kind of want to go smash it open and see what's in there.
Right, but I should say something, which is that sadly I do not still have that savings account that I can't get into. That was long ago. Yeah, I had £100 a month going into it, and it was basically back in the kind of much earlier days of online banking, and I needed about three different things to get into it, and I could never remember all three of them at the same time. And every time you reset your password, they had to send you a letter. So that was where the friction came in for me, was the letter, and then it would just go around in circles. But the one mistake that I must admit I have made over my financial life is whilst I'm really good at telling people they should automate their savings, I'm really bad at automating my own savings, and I rely on doing it manually. And I had this with my investment ISA. Basically, my provider won't let me choose the day that the money comes out. So I ended up in this kind of situation where I'd get paid and then the money would come out 2 weeks later. So what I was having to do was shuffle money around, put it into one account, then put it back and everything. It was causing me problems. So I cancelled the regular payment. Now, what I should have done is I should have switched to a different investment platform that was more flexible and allowed me to do it and make it frictionless. And if I was doing that, I'd have had money every month going into my ISA. And as it is, because I don't do that, I don't have money every month going into my ISA. I have money going into my ISA on lumpy occasions when I remember. So that would be my one tip off the back of what we were saying, was like, automate it. And if you can't automate it, find somewhere that you can automate it. There is a lot of different savings providers and investment platforms out there nowadays that can increase the flexibility. So do that, basically.
Mm-hmm. Simon, sticking with savings, and hundreds of thousands of low-income savers who put away money in a government savings scheme have received more than $220 million in bonus payments since 2018. Now, over 500,000 customers have opened a government help-to-save account since the scheme was launched, paying almost $600 million into their savings pots. Now, you can tuck away up to 50 quid a month, and you can get a £25 government top-up. The scheme was due to come to an end, actually, in September 2023, but has now been extended to April 2027. So could you benefit? Simon, help to save, something we've heard a lot about, but I'm not sure we've gone into much depth about it on the podcast. So what is it? How does it work? Why was it going to be ended? Why is it extended? Why were they even going to stop it at all?
Right. You can open a help to save account if you're receiving universal credit and you had take home pay of £1 or more in your last monthly assessment period. To claim universal credit, you must be under the state pension age and have £16,000 or less in money, savings and investments. And you might be eligible if you're out of work, you're working part-time or self-employed, if you're unable to work. And it's basically the support scheme for people on low incomes. Now, I think that this help to save scheme, which not many people know about, is actually a really good idea. And we've talked about this before. We talked about this in a bit of depth. I think it was probably like 6 months ago. There was a couple of reports that came out about trying to help people build rainy day savings pots in the same way, to go back to my point that I just made, that we make it easy for people to save pension pots through auto-enrollment. And the great thing about auto-enrollment is you're enrolled into the pension unless you opt out. Most people don't opt out. It's massively increased the number of people who are saving into a pension. But then the other really good bit is the money comes out of your bank account. Sorry, the money doesn't come out of your bank account and rely on you doing it. The money comes out of your wages when you get paid. So your pension is totally automatic. Now, the one thing I am doing every month, which I'm not doing with my ISA, is I'm saving into my workplace pension. And I've been doing that for nearly 20 years now, because just after I started at This Is Money, I signed up to the pension scheme. And every month it's just been doing the same thing. Now, I've done some kind of fiddling around with the funds. I probably would have done better if I'd just stayed in the default fund, like the global stock market tracker, and not tried to be clever. But none of that really matters. What really matters is that every single month for nearly 20 years, me and my employer and the tax man, who's been bumping up payments by 25% to cover basic rate tax relief, have been putting some money into my pension every month, which is where I would say schemes like Help to Save, all those ideas around helping people to build up a rainy day pot through work. And again, it's harder if you're self-employed. So you've got to take the onus is on you if you're self-employed to do this, right? And we need to work out how we help self-employed people to do this. But if you do that, and you do that every month, then you can build up a surprising pot. And going back to my savings account that I was locked out of, by the time I managed to get into that, I had just under £3,000. That was how long I couldn't get into that savings account for. I mean, I obviously was trying to save some money, so I wasn't trying too hard. But yeah, it was great. And it was like, great, I have built up quite a good little pot here.
So Lee, what do you reckon to schemes like Help to Save?
I think the Help to Save one's really good, because it goes back to the point we were making about getting in the habit, about having a low pot. I mean, the stats that the government put out this week suggest that those who have opened a Help to Save account, 94% deposited the maximum amount into their nest egg each month for £50. And the lure is obviously that you are going to be getting that doubled in the form of interest that you get paid by the government. Obviously, if you're on universal credit, you are potentially struggling, and it might feel completely unattainable to have a savings pot. I think that this scheme is a good one. And that's why I was quite surprised. I think when we did speak about this before, about 6 months ago, it was kind of like, we need to be encouraging low-income households to save. I was kind of thinking, but you've already got a kind of scheme that does that. And actually, again, when I saw these stats this week, I was surprised how many people have them. I mean, over 500,000
people have a Help to Save account. I've opened one since it was launched in September 2018, paying in almost £600 million. So listen, again, anything that gets people in a saving habit, Georgie, I'm all for it. I guess what I'd like to know, and actually probably what I will ask the government, is once that's done, so once the 4 years is up, what happens to the money? And, you know, I think the next step would be having a bit of free financial coaching, or a bit of time to be like, okay, you've now built up this pot, here's what you should do with it next. Don't know what the follow-up steps are to it, but I'd be interested to know, and I'll go away and find out.
I'm going to say something controversially. Having just read a lot of the kind of MPs' concerns over the lifetime ISA and the fact that 87% of people who bought using one said they didn't actually need it anyway, I am much more in favour of my taxpayer money going to help people to save, to get into that habit, to these sorts of schemes, than I am to help 87% of people who don't actually need the help to get on the property ladder using a life. And to go into...
George, don't go there. Don't go into lifetime ISAs.
It's the principle. It's more about saving for rainy day, I think, is what we really need to encourage. You know, saving for properties is a couple of steps beyond that. Isn't it better that we try and get those, I don't even know, some horrible statistics about how few people have just any sort of emergency savings? That's surely where we should be focusing our attention.
What you mean, rather than encouraging them to save into an account where they can't get the money out without like a massive penalty? I mean, yeah, obvs, as they say. Look, the lifetime ISA is one of the, without going down the lifetime ISA rabbit hole, okay, it's one of those financial products that, right, you zoom out on a big level, it's a bad idea, right? It smacks of something that was designed on the back of a cigarette packet, right? But on the individual level, it can be a great deal. If you are genuinely saving for your first property and you haven't bought a property and you're going to do it, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you put money in there? You can't get an instant 25% uplift on your money many places. You can get it in a lifetime ISA and you can get it in a pension. So overall, bad idea. But if you're listening to this and you are a wannabe first-time buyer and you're saving for a home, put your money in a lifetime ISA and take full advantage of that bonus, because you don't get that kind of deal many places. But you need to make sure that you're buying a house that's worth below the threshold and all those other things. So go read our guide to lifetime ISAs and that. But it's just one of those interesting things. Whereas the Help to Save thing, macro zoom out level, yeah, this is quite a good idea. Individual level, yeah, this is quite a good idea. It's like, it's probably the best help too. Of anything, from the back in the Help to boom, right, where there was Help to this and Help to that coming around left and center, because let's remember the lifetime ISA, that was a replacement, wasn't it, for the Help to Buy ISA? What was it called? Was that what it's called?
Yeah, Help to Buy.
We're meant to know this stuff, right? it's our job, and we're like, was there a Help to Buy ISA, or did I just make that up? Help to Save was the best of the Help to Suite, or whatever you want to call it.
To round off our savings first half, Santander has launched a new current account with a range of perks called Edge Explorer. Now, one of the biggest draws of the new Santander account is a chunky 6% linked Edge Saver Easy Access account that it comes with. Now, the downside of this whole account, a monthly fee of £17 or £204 a year for the privilege of keeping it. Lee, firstly, what do you get with this account and is it worth it?
So there's been a bit of a movement around current accounts in the last couple of weeks, including bonuses and things that are being paid out, which we'll mention the Nationwide account in a sec. But this Santander account, as you say, £17 a month, £204 a year. There are other accounts that are on the market that cost roughly this amount. And I think banks are seeing it as a way of trying to hook in customers who want something extra from their current account, a current account that does more things. You can earn up to £20 cash back with this account. Santander actually axed the cash back on its Edge account in May. But with that £17 fee, if you manage to make the most of that cash back, of course, it's just £3 a month that then fizzles down to. But that 6% account is
pretty good. You can't beat that anywhere else. But there's a massive caveat to that. You can only stick up to £4,000 into the rate. But if you did have £3,400 in that account, you would earn the equivalent of £17 per month interest. So basically, you could cover the cost of this account by holding that much money in the current account with that rate and take advantage of the 1% cash back of which is up to £10 a month on eligible debit card spending and up to £10 per month on eligible household bills paid by direct debit, which is where that £20 element comes in. The other interesting thing about this as well, which is a perk that does come with a fair few accounts now, is the worldwide family insurance. And actually, this one's a little bit different because it comes with winter sports cover, which might be of interest to people that...
Simon.
Of Simon, exactly. Yeah, it might be a good one for Simon if he can figure out how to unlock his current account and get in there and potentially switch it. which I think is pretty good. You know, in terms of if you're going to take advantage of that and actually make it work, you know, it could be a good thing to do. There's also breakdown cover and mobile phone cover. And also access to 24/7 online GP services. Now, that 24/7 GP services line is one I'm seeing a lot in accounts at the moment. There's been a big push. It feels like people are kind of fed up with their local doctor surgery and rather just get quick answers by services like this. But I keep thinking, if loads of people are using this, isn't it just going to block the 24/7 GP access and probably just end up in the same boat that we're in? We've all gone to our online GP services and now we've blocked that up as well. But you have to go and crunch away the maths on this. And if it's going to work for you, it's going to work for you. As I say, if you are a family that goes on a winter ski trip, this probably is worth a look. But as everything, got to check those terms and conditions and make sure it is going to be fully covering you. The other current account, I'll just quickly mention, just because it is just so popular and the amount of people that read this story was absolutely crackers, is that Nationwide is once again paying £175 to switch through the current account switching service. You can switch to the Flex Direct, Flex Plus or Flex Account. New Flex Direct customers get 1% cash back on debit card spending for 12 months. This is vastly popular. And also, you're likely to be eligible for a fair share payment if there is another one.
The fair share payment?
Yeah, the fair share payment.
Mind us.
Is the bonus that is paid in the last 3 years to Nationwide customers as part of the fact that it's been making pretty healthy profits and sharing the love, Georgie, to its customers. But you got to make sure that you've got the right amount of money in there, for example. And again, all about reading those T's and C's. But it's a very, very popular account to switch to. And it's quite a bit simpler than getting your head around the Santander one. But I would say, weigh up all your options, because it is easy to just go and chase this easy cash. And I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I have a secondary bank account and I use the current account switching service to switch that secondary account around. So I have my main account where bills are paid, my salary is paid. I have a secondary account for the purpose of, I use it sometimes for like holiday spending, might stick a couple hundred quid in there so I know what's there, trying to budget with it. But I also use it to utilize these switching bonuses, because I don't really want to do it for my main account, but for my secondary account I'm happy. But there are quite often hoops you've got to jump to ensure that you get that payout. So for example, this Nationwide, you've got to have two active direct debits set up on it. You can expect the payment relatively swiftly these days, but you'll need £1,000 deposited in the account and to make a debit card payment within 31 days of opening it. So if you could tick all those boxes, it's worth doing. I tend to, with that secondary account switching, I don't tend to do the ones where you've got to do set up active direct debits, which is what a lot of them do now. So make sure we play by the rules, you get your payout.
And also make sure that it serves what you want it for. Don't just go running after the money and find out that actually this is just it's not going to serve you well. Simon?
Yeah, on that note, like with things like free winter sports insurance, I check the winter sports insurance, check what's covered, because there's winter sports insurance and there's winter short sports insurance. Like, are you?
What do you mean by that, Simon?
Okay, so basically, are you covered if you're off-piste, right? So most insurers won't cover you if you're like out of bounds, but if you're like, if you get injured on like a bit in just by the side of the piste kind of stuff, like stuff that's in the resort, some policies might not pay out, others might not pay out. How much does it cover for injury, getting off the mountain if something happens, if anything gets stolen, all that kind of stuff? Sounds quite adventurous though, doesn't it? The Edge Explorer account. It's a bit like, it's quite action sports. Also sounds a little bit like the kind of thing that someone writes to one of those newspaper agony aunt sex columns about. My partner wants us to become Edge Explorers, but I'm not quite sure whether we should.
That's it for part one.
I think that might be the single funniest thing that's been said on the podcast.
I knew that'd get you. I just thought of it while you were talking. I was like, that's going to get them. I'm joined now by Rob Morgan of Charles Stanley Direct for our weekly Investing Explained feature. Rob, I've got a question here from a listener. I'm a higher rate taxpayer and have been saving £300 a month into my work pension. I don't do a tax return, so how can I make sure I get higher rate tax relief on my contributions?
Yes, it's a good question, Simon, and it's very relevant, I think, as pension contributions are a priority for lots more people finding themselves paying those higher rates of tax. Now, with a personal pension, such as a SIP, you get basic rate tax relief of 20% added automatically, and you can claim back any higher rate relief, so a further 20% on top in the case of higher rate tax. However, your work pension may be set up in such a way that you get all the tax relief up front anyway. With salary sacrifice or net pay arrangements, all the tax relief, including higher and additional rate, is automatic. And that's because these arrangements have the effect of diverting part of your salary into the pension. Similarly, with any defined benefits pension, such as a final salary scheme, there's usually no high rate relief to be claimed back because contributions are made from gross rather than net pay. So first, check how your pension scheme operates with your HR or payroll department if you're not sure. But if your scheme is what's known as relief at source and you do need to claim higher rate relief yourself, don't worry. It's reasonably easy to get it sorted and receive a rebate either through a self-assessment tax return, or there is now a dedicated HMRC online tool for claiming pension tax relief on the gov.uk website, thereby avoiding the tax return process for those with no other tax or reliefs to declare.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Welcome back. In the latest What Could Possibly Go Wrong move by the government, HMRC now has the power to take money directly from your bank account if you haven't paid a tax bill. This includes funds held in cash ISAs. Now, this scheme, known as Direct Recovery of Debts, or DRD, was launched in 2015 but paused during the COVID pandemic. Now HMRC has officially relaunched it in what it calls a test and learn phase after being given the power to do so by the Chancellor in the spring statement in March. So, Simon, nervous about coming back to you now. Where will this go? Who knows? But, you know, what could possibly go wrong here? Just explain to us, how will this actually work and what is a test and learn stage when it's at home?
I mean, what could possibly go wrong here? As part of a properly functioning tax system, one of the key elements is that people need to think that a tax is fair, right? And that they are being treated fairly. I'm not sure that this fits with that whole vibe. People reading this story are horrified. I had a conversation with one of the news editors on the Daily Mail yesterday. She was like, I'm just still reeling from the fact that HMRC could come into my bank account and take my money. Anyway, they won't just do that. Right, so the way this works is taxpayers will receive a visit from HMRC agents before any money is taken from their bank account. They will identify the taxpayer, confirm it's their debt, and discuss options for repayment. The rules state that a taxpayer must be left with at least £5,000 in their account to enable them to cover essential expenses, 30-day time frame for tax appeals, which must also have passed before HMRC can raid someone's account. Anybody who's identified as vulnerable won't be targeted. Anyway, tax experts have said, no, not okay, not cool. Dawn Register, a tax dispute resolution partner advisory firm BDO, said, given the pressure on public finances, it's clear that HMRC is determined to get tougher on those who can pay but don't pay. The relaunch of this draconian power underlines how important it is not to stick your head in the sand and ignore HMRC demands. So if you owe tax and you're ignoring them, then they can come and take it off you. The problem is quite often people don't agree with the tax that they are being told that they owe. And anybody who has ever done a tax return will know that you put in a lot of numbers and then it spits out that you owe X amount. And then it shows you a working that quite often makes no sense to you whatsoever. I am often puzzled by how much tax I owe HMRC, particularly as all of my earnings are PAYE. I'm like, but you've already taken it off me. How can I owe you that much? And there's all kinds of craziness that goes on with your tax return. You can't, you know, as everybody knows, you know, you can't really phone the tax man and talk to anyone. I mean, actually, maybe you can phone the tax man and talk to someone. It's just they've got to the point where there's so few people phoning them because they don't think that they'll ever be able to get through to someone to speak to them that you could now actually ring them. So if you do need to ring them, do try. It's possible that so many people have given up on it that you can actually speak to someone. And then you see a story about this. I would say that, right, maybe there is a reason for this power. Maybe there, it is a good thing. Maybe it's justifiable. I struggle to see how it is. But read the room, not the time, you know, to be kind of relaunching this. Like, maybe wait until everyone's just a little bit happier about the tax stuff before you decide to relaunch something like this.
I hate the idea of this, of going into your bank account, one, but yeah. Your ISA funds as well. But Lee, I've been on the receiving end of a mistake by HMRC, and they said that I owed money. I didn't owe money. I'd very clearly told them that I didn't need to put in a tax return. This was many years ago, etc. And I got caught in just an absolute maze of nightmare, Kafkaesque, kind of like calling them up for ages, call us back, call us there, da da. It took bloody ages. It's those sort of things that really stress me out as well, the mistakes that inevitably will be made.
I think that this is a slippery slope. And I thought that this was a slippery slope when I first read about it a decade ago. And I remember thinking, people are just not going to like the fact that the state can potentially come in with its grabby hands, get into your bank account and take what is owed. Now, this should be a world in which tax bills and hefty tax bills, if correct, should be paid. And actually, I was reading the comments in there, and there was an accountant in there saying, "Oh, it's bad, but it's also in a way good because there's so many people I see that should have paid a tax bill that haven't paid a tax bill." But it is a slippery slope, Georgia. Now they said that to kind of put a little bit around this, they have come out with a kind of, they say that taxpayers will receive a visit from HMRC agents before any money is taken from their bank account, where they will identify the taxpayer, confirm it's their debt, and to discuss options for repayment. That sounds to me like that's going to be quite an expensive job for HMRC. Like, as in, I can't imagine how many agents are going to go around and do that. Just, I don't know how feasible that is. I haven't seen the full plans of how many staffed agents are going to be doing this. The rules state that a taxpayer must be left with at least £5,000 in their account to enable them to cover essential expenses, and there's a 30-day time frame for tax appeals, which must have also passed before HMRC can raid someone's account. Customers who are identified as vulnerable won't be targeted under the scheme. They are the kind of ring fencing-y rules around this that we've been told. It's saying, you know, latest figures that there's 42.8 billion in tax owed to HMRC, which remains unpaid, with the amount of unpaid tax significantly higher than pre-pandemic. The government wants to collect 11 billion more in unpaid debt by the end of 2030. They probably seeing this as a little bit of low-hanging fruit in terms of they're looking for ways to plug this fabled black hole, and we are not getting into budget, black holes, labour or any of this today. No.
but they are looking for ways to plug this. And I guess this, to them, feels like the sensible way to do it. And again, I don't know, you know, how many people owe big chunky tax bills and the reasons for not paying and how people get away with it. Because I mean, okay, I you know, PAYE, but I get a letter every 6 months from HMRC, and I can tell you it's like clockwork. I get one and it says, I have underpaid tax by a couple of hundred quid. You owe us a couple of hundred quid. And then 6 months after that, I'll get a letter saying, you have overpaid tax. We owe you a couple of hundred quid. And I always think, how does it, why? And I always go to try and get to the bottom of it, but the thought of phoning HMRC and actually trying to find out the answer just fills me with dread, and I don't want to do it. But how people have big chunky tax bills that aren't paid, you know, I don't get it. I don't know how it's spiraled into this kind of the state that we're in now, where there apparently is tens of billions of pounds in unpaid tax. Like, I don't know. But I don't think that being able to, the HMRC to be able to discourage your bank account is the answer. I really don't. I think it's just such a slippery slope, because it starts with that, and then what does it lead to? Not to go all kind of big brother on you, but I mean, I don't like it one bit.
I mean, maybe they're using it as just a bit of a deterrent and saying, look, we now have this power, therefore... And okay, if you're not going to use that power, but that power is always going to be there. It's not like you can go back to holding hands, you know.
There are some non-tax abiding citizens out there who, unlike us, right, who always want to stay on the right side of the tax man, consider it, you know, appropriate to basically just refuse. No, I'm sorry, I don't owe you the money. I'm not paying it. Kind of thing. And there's like, often it might be people who get caught.
But they must have declared it in the first place. No?
Tax avoidance schemes or things like that. Well, I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I do know that, you know, most of us pay our taxes when we're made and don't think that we have any choice. But I do know that there is a small percentage of people out there who are, you know, who are not doing that, and they don't believe in doing it, and that they, you know, they will do everything they possibly can to avoid it. And so it creates this situation where this happens. If the powers were just being used against those people and they're just being used to do that, maybe fair enough. But like you say, it does sound like a recipe for disaster. And what I do know is it's a recipe for bad headlines and lots of comments from people saying this is absolutely outrageous. So, yeah, that's the main problem I would see with this. Possibly does more damage than good.
All right then, reader question time. This one is for our pensions agony uncle, Sir Steve Webb. I will receive my state pension at the end of November 2026, even though my birthday is at the end of July, when I will be 66. Can you tell me why I have to wait until the November to receive it and not the end of July? Will the missing 3 or 4 months be reimbursed or taxed? Simon, what's going on here? What does Sir Steve say?
What's going on here is that there was a law passed back in 2007 that said the state pension age for both men and women should rise to 66 by 2026, 67 by 2036, and 68 by 2046. This is meant to reflect life expectancy changes. The moves to 66 and to 67 have both been brought forward since that law was passed. So this is in Steve's words here. A law passed in 2011 brought forward the date at which the pension age would reach 66 by 6 years to 2020. And another law passed in 2014 brought forward the date for a pension age of 67 by 8 years to 2028. In terms of the move from 66 to 67, this won't happen overnight, but will be phased in between April 2026 and April 2028. The phasing means there will be some people, such as yourself, who will have a state pension age which is not a complete number of years, but is, for example, 66 years and 4 months. So I think there's probably like lots of people in this scenario who are labouring under the impression that they will be getting their state pension from their birthday, and will then discover that they fall into this kind of grey zone in the middle. Now, if you go to thisismoney.co.uk/Steve Webb, you will find all of Steve's columns. You will find this column where Steve explains it. And what you will also find in Steve's column is our calculator. When will you get your state pension? And you can put in your date of birth, your gender and your postcode. Those two things are not relevant for when you get your state pension. But what it does is it also shows you life expectancy and how much state pension you're likely to get. But it will tell you exactly when you'll get your state pension. I can tell you when I'll get mine, for example, because I've got it in front of me now. I can have my state pension. Dramatic pause. Under current government plans, I will get my state pension in 2046.
All right, good.
And I'll get it on my birthday because I'm in the round number bracket. Sorry, what? That was like the crucial piece of information that I should have told you, is I will get it when I am 68 and I'll get it on my birthday.
Simon, stat of the week.
78%. That is the number of people who were surveyed by wealth manager Saltus, who said that they expected tax hikes to be brought into force over the coming 12 months. That's quite a lot of people. And these are skewing towards the wealthier people. 48% said that tax changes were the biggest single risk to their wealth, second only to inflation, which 58% were worried about. And it's capital gains tax that wealthy families think will be hiked. Some 46% reckon it's going to go up. And that's after quite big hikes to capital gains tax rates in the last budget, which actually follow on from the capital gains tax allowance being cut quite dramatically. And there's some figures that we talked about a couple of podcasts back, which seem to indicate that what this has done has stopped people from selling investments and lowered the capital gains tax take. So it might be that if Rachel Reeves does raise the capital gains tax rates, she actually ends up getting less money in than she thinks she's going to.
Just to say, you have a very comprehensive roundup of all the speculation that might or might not be in the budget. You can take a look at that if you fancy a really depressing read, basically, or you just want to stay on top of things. I've also checked my state pension age, Simon, here. Apparently, it will be January the 14th, 2050, which means life expectancy for someone of my gender in my area is 88 years and 2 months, which means you will roughly get 20 years and 2 months, I like how it says, optimistically, to enjoy your retirement, in theory.
Yeah, see, I'm only going to get roughly 17 years and 3 months.
Is that because you're a boy?
Yeah.
Well, never mind, eh? Never mind.
Fortunately, I live in a quite high life expectancy postcode, though.
Mm. But also, you're retired 2 years earlier than me, so you'll be like, I'm on the slopes. Although you think you want to retire before that, don't you? But either way, that's it for this week. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. If you have any comments or questions for the team, or anything you'd like them to get to, Simon.
You can email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk. And we want to hear your savings tips. You've got any oddball savings tips that you do? Anything that rivals revenge saving or mind tricks? Tell us them and we'll talk about the best ones. And come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all podcast paths and join in the debate and read comments.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.